Okay, so this is downtown Taylor, Texas. We're on Main Street. That was kind of cute, I have to say. I mean, it really feels like a prototypical downtown Texas town.
I'm in the car driving with Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling and Tina Vasquez, who's a reporter from Rewire.news.
So we're in Taylor, Texas, about a half hour north of Austin, and it has a cute little main street of old brick buildings, you know, kind of like this typical small town America kind of place.
And we're there because we're on our way to check out the T. Don Hutto Residential Center, which is an all-female immigrant detention facility here in Taylor, Texas.
And even though both of you had reported on Hutto, neither of you had ever been.
Right. No, never been there.
No.
And so what were you expecting when we went?
I was expecting it to be really secluded and hard to get to.
Yeah, I expected it to be like in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, where are we going now?
We're
going
to Hutto. See.
Oh, shit. Okay, I've never seen anything like this. And I've been to a lot of these places.
It's right up against the town.
It's like...
Yeah, there are people who, like, wake up every day and they look at Hutto. Like, there's a man jogging by Hutto.
The T. Don Hutto Residential Center, or Hutto for short, is a detention center in the middle of a neighborhood of small ranch houses just a few blocks from downtown Taylor. It's run by CoreCivic, a for-profit private prison company contracted by ICE. And since 2017, the company's received over $200 million from the government to run centers like these.
This hulking structure, a former prison, holds over 500 immigrant women at a time. And we're here at Hutto because in this episode, we're going to talk about something difficult: sexual abuse at immigrant detention facilities.
There's a long-standing and extensive pattern of sexual harassment and abuse in immigrant detention. Recently, in the news, you might have heard about the high number of abuse complaints at shelters for migrant children. The number of abuse allegations of adults in detention are similarly bad.
A recent report found that the Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security received over 1,000 reports of sexual abuse or assault in detention from 2014 to 2016. That's an average of more than one complaint per day.
Hutto has been at the center of the conversation around sexual abuse of immigrant detainees. And one particularly high-profile case, which we're going to follow closely on today's episode, has led activists and residents in Taylor, Texas, to ask, why is this happening? And what is ICE doing to prevent it? From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a collaboration with Rewire.news. We zoom in on one notorious detention center in Texas and one specific case to look at how and why the system allows for sexual abuse of detainees to continue year after year. And just a warning, this piece will go into detail about sexual abuse, assault, and self-harm. I'm sitting at a table in a small room in Texas with a janky air conditioner rattling in the background. Next to me is Latino USA producer Maggie Freeling and also Tina Vasquez, who's a senior reporter covering immigration at Rewire.news. And Tina reported today's story with us.
The woman across from us is Laura Monterosa. She's a 24-year-old from El Salvador. She came to the U.S. seeking asylum. She has short hair, glasses, and a baby face. She's very nervous, swinging back and forth in her chair as she tries to explain her story. She cries during the interview, a lot.
If you don't feel comfortable giving an answer, that's okay. You can wait a little bit and think before you answer.
Laura was once detained at Hutto, but she's not there anymore. We're sitting with her in the offices of a local nonprofit.
An interpreter is at the table with us, frantically scribbling what Laura says on a notepad. That's the voice you'll hear translating her.
I heard that in America, they would support you. They would protect you. It was a place where you can find safety, security. And that's what I wanted them to catch me, basically. But after they did, I realized that that was just the beginning of a nightmare.
The nightmare Laura's talking about is how she says she wound up being sexually abused inside Hutto.
Laura says her struggles didn't just start when she got to the United States. According to her account, she's had an extremely rough life, full of trauma since the very beginning. Growing up, she says her father was an abusive drug addict and that her mother died by suicide when she was just 8 years old.
As Laura got older, she says, things didn't get better. Eventually, she said that family forced her into child prostitution. They trafficked her.
No sabían por qué. And I did not understand why those men were on top of me, why they were doing that to me.
Laura told us that she felt worthless, but that despite all of this, she pushed on with her life. She eventually became a mom, had two kids. She got a job as an orderly at a hospital, and she found a partner, a woman.
She's a lesbian. We were in a lesbian relationship.
Laura also found it wasn't easy to be gay in El Salvador. Eventually, her coworkers found out.
They could not accept lesbians.
She says they stole her phone, went into her private photos, and tried to blackmail her. Eventually, she says she was fired for being a lesbian.
Laura went to the police to file a report against them. And when those co-workers found out, she says they went after her.
And I will never forget that day. It was at 1 a.m. in the morning. They came, they knocked the door, and they threw me in the ground. And they started hitting me and cursing at me.
Abusaron sexualmente de mí.
They sexually abused me.
Y mi hija solo se quedaba ahí, yo, okay.
And my daughter was there, and she was watching everything. They told me, if you don't leave right now, your kids are going to suffer the consequences. I love my daughter. I love her so much. But I knew that I had to go. I had to leave my house. I had to leave my children. Because it was impossible for us to be together and be safe. So that night, I left.
No le dije nada, solo me...
I just left.
No, era...
I wasn't brave enough to go and tell her.
Despedirme de ella no te dio valor, solo me fui nada más.
It's been almost 2 years since Laura left her kids in El Salvador and came to the U.S. seeking asylum. That's when she was detained by ICE and eventually became one of the many women who say they were sexually abused by guards at Hutto.
For example, in 2007, a guard at Hutto was accused of assaulting a woman while her son was sleeping in his crib inside the cell. Then over 2010 and 2011, another guard was charged with sexually assaulting 8 detainees. In 2014, a woman reported that a staff member who identified themselves as a doctor molested her.
The list of accusations at Hutto goes on.
Laura was taken to Hutto in May of 2017, and just about a month later, she says, the first sexual advances started from a female guard.
When I got to that detention center, it was horrible. This officer, she started sexually abusing me. And I told her that I didn't want to do that, that I didn't want that.
We're going to call the alleged abuser by the name Laura calls her, Officer X, because as of right now, no formal charges have been brought against her. And Laura says that guards like Officer X know how to harass detainees without being seen by a camera or another person.
Okay, so yeah, when she sexually abused me, she would do it in the bathroom and in the area, in the recreational area.
Laura tells us that although she's okay with talking about being abused, she didn't want to relive the exact details. But in a statement she eventually gave to a lawyer, she describes in detail her account of what happened with Officer X.
In this written account, Laura says that a female guard first approached her to befriend her, asking questions about her immigration case, even telling Laura she would help her with her case, something guards cannot do. But then the questions started to get more personal.
She asked if Laura was a lesbian, and then she tried to pursue a relationship with her. Laura says she declined Officer X and told her she couldn't be in a relationship with her because she was a detainee and that it was inappropriate. But Laura says the officer was persistent and eventually became physical with her. Laura says Officer X started groping her breasts and touching her between her legs and talking to her about explicit sexual acts. Laura says these incidents occurred sometimes several times a week. She says that when she threatened to tell on her, Officer X...
She started laughing at me. She looked at me and she said, really? That they're going to believe you, a detainee? They're going to believe you over me? That's never going to happen. I was scared because I thought that she was going to deport me, that they could send me to another detention center and deport me.
Tenía miedo que ella me deportara.
So Laura says she didn't speak out because she was afraid that she could be retaliated against and ultimately she could be deported.
In theory, detainees who are victims of sexual abuse are protected by a federal law called PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act.
The law says people in detention have a right to speak out and report abuse and harassment freely and without retaliation.
In a written statement, ICE told us that detainees do not face retaliation for reporting allegations of abuse.
But despite what ICE says, and despite the law, advocates say retaliation is common, and Laura believes she saw it firsthand.
While Laura was at Hutto, a woman she was detained with said she was abused. And after she reported the abuse, she was transferred to another detention center and swiftly deported.
We looked into this claim, and we were able to verify it.
Again, Laura says that because of the possibility of retaliation, she didn't report the abuse that was happening to her. She stayed quiet and didn't make a formal complaint. But someone else did.
And just to be clear before we go any further, there are multiple accounts of what happened between Laura and Officer X. And we may never know exactly what transpired. But we're going to tell you what we could find out based on records requests and over a year of interviews and reporting. We should also mention now that both ICE and CoreCivic declined to record an interview for this story.
In November of 2017, 6 months after the alleged abuse started, an anonymous civilian called the PREA tip line and reported an inappropriate relationship between Laura and Officer X. In a translated transcript from Spanish to English, the tipster, who claims to be Laura's friend, paints a different picture from what we heard from Laura, that of a tumultuous and consensual relationship.
The tipster mentions fights between Laura and Officer X. They say that Laura has tried to end the relationship, but couldn't because Officer X is, quote, too controlling. The tipster also says that Laura is jealous because she believes Officer X is flirting with another detainee. The tipster says they're worried that Laura is going to harm herself because of the relationship.
However it went down, it's worth mentioning that it's illegal in all 50 states for a guard to be in any sexual relationship with a detainee. And the reasoning behind that is that the inherent power balance between guard and detainee means that true consent is not possible.
Shortly after that anonymous tip, Laura says a woman showed up and wanted to speak with her.
And she talked to me and she made me believe that she was going to help me, that she was going to support me. So I told her the whole story, everything that happened.
Laura told us that the woman identified herself as an investigator who was looking into the abuse allegations.
And from there, ICE opened an investigation with the assistance of the Williamson County Sheriffs.
So around that time in November, I emailed ICE and I asked them about the status of the investigation. And very late at night, they sent me an email saying that her claims had been found to be unsubstantiated, meaning they couldn't determine whether or not the abuse had happened. They said, quote, the information provided by Monterosa could not be corroborated and the case lacked evidence to pursue any further action.
We requested a copy of the investigation through a FOIA, or a Freedom of Information Act request.
But we weren't going to sit around and wait for it. And during the investigation, Laura gave the names of multiple witnesses, including a fellow detainee and two former guards, who she says were aware of the abuse.
Laura also gave us the names of the guards. So we set out to speak to the witnesses for ourselves.
But with very common last names in a state as big as Texas, we had pretty bad luck searching databases and documents to find them.
Eventually, we found one of the employees, who has since resigned from Hutto. We messaged her on Facebook and called, but we got no response. So with her address, and since we were already in Texas, we went to her house to knock on the door.
Cul-de-sacs, and this is actually like upscaley suburban.
Like, I'm wondering now how much you make working for Core Civic.
Yeah. Oh, there's somebody there.
Yep.
Okay, so Maria's walking to the door. They opened. Oh, she's yelling at Maria. Oh my God, she's shutting the door in her face. So it looks like Maria is actually like begging her to speak, and the door's back open. Now it's shut again.
Yeah, so she basically said, "Don't bother me. I know who you are. I don't want to speak to you." And then I just said, "I just want to," you know, before she slammed the door on my face. And then she said, "If you come back, I'm going to call the police." And that's when she opened the door again, and I said, "I just want you to know, I don't want you to think I'm being a terrible person for doing this. You spoke out, and we want to talk to you about that." "Yes, I know I did. Thank you very much. I'm not interested in speaking with you anymore. Please stop bothering me and go away."
So that was it. We were not going to be able to get a full account from her of what she saw at Hutto.
But a few months later, we received the investigative files, and with them, the guard's statements.
And it turns out, one of them confronted Officer X about the relationship.
And that's coming up after the break. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Do you see Jesus in the burnt toast?
Do you realize that literally there's a bucket of condoms by the exit?
Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me?
We cannot just say stop, I want to get off.
Invisibilia, season 5, out March 8th.
We're back with the story of Laura Monterrosa and her allegations of sexual assault at the Hutto Detention Center in Texas. 6 months after we filed for the investigative files, we received them. 277 pages of heavily redacted documents detailing how Laura's case unfolded.
The investigation into Laura's allegations took less than 19 days. The investigators interviewed Laura, three witnesses she named, and Officer X, who denied anything happened. Officer X also denied that she's a lesbian.
We reached out to Officer X, by the way, to get her side of the story, but she declined to comment.
One of the former guards Laura named as a witness denied ever seeing anything occur between Laura and Officer X. Same for the fellow detainee named by Laura.
The other former officer, however, gave interesting testimony. On the same day she quit her job as a guard at Hutto, she says she confronted Officer X and threatened to report her suspicions that Officer X and Laura were in a relationship.
The investigators also tried to get video footage and were told that there wasn't any.
And there's also some stuff in the files that doesn't look great for Laura. The investigation mentions that fellow detainees complained that she's, quote, aggressive and annoying. Her record in detention includes conflicts with the staff and other detainees, and even an allegation of sexual harassment against her by another detainee.
Laura isn't, quote, a perfect immigrant or a perfect survivor. She's complicated. She has a long history of trauma and abuse, and it's common for victims of abuse to perpetuate the cycle themselves. But just because she's imperfect doesn't mean that her allegations of abuse aren't real.
While we ultimately don't know exactly what happened between Laura and Officer X, there are three people who indicate something happened. The anonymous tipster, the former guard, and Laura herself.
What we do know is that Laura's story does fit into a greater documented pattern of allegations of abuse at the Hutto detention facility. We mentioned a few of the cases earlier, and at one point during our reporting, we obtained an email that reinforced that pattern of abuse. It was from a whistleblower who appears to have been maybe a guard or an employee at Hutto. First of all, I would like to remain anonymous. I want to explain to you some previous incidents that have occurred at T. Don Hutto.
The email wasn't directly sent to us. It was leaked to us by the recipient.
For example, a few years ago, former recreation supervisor was terminated because he was having an inappropriate relationship with a resident from Guatemala.
And the letter goes on with stories of abuse, all at Hutto and similar to Lauda's.
Going on for years and nothing has changed. I hope this information is helpful to help protect the residents from predators. Please cover the officers' names if you talk about this. Thank you. And in a recent Taylor, Texas City Council meeting, people from the community spoke for almost an hour about the abuses that are allegedly taking place at Hutto. This included two women who were once detained at the facility.
It's very sad that we only have 3 minutes to be able to talk about this because there are many abuses that I suffer inside the detention center, including sexual abuse.
And there's another pattern that Laura's case fits into nationwide, and that's that few abuse reports end up being found credible. Research on sexual abuse shows that false claims are very uncommon. Yet according to ICE's own numbers, only 10% were substantiated in 2018, meaning ICE determined only 10% of the people who came forward with allegations of abuse had credible cases. So we wanted to know, why is that happening, and who is holding ICE accountable and making sure that they're handling abuse cases correctly?
Right. And so we did a bunch of research about that. And so right now we're going to do our best job to break down the checks and balances that exist to protect people like Laura and why they don't seem to be working.
I think when we think of investigations, you know, we think of people doing their due diligence. I'm not sure that's happening.
This is Erica Gamble. She's a prisoner advocate at the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Her job is to monitor detention facilities to see if they're doing what they're supposed to.
She says she often sees ICE doing the bare minimum to investigate cases.
You know, I think we're all sort of grappling in the advocacy community on who to turn to and when we're looking at these allegations that are being consistently unsubstantiated or investigated poorly or not investigated at all.
But there is someone they should be able to turn to, someone whose job it is to make sure that detention centers are doing what they're supposed to do when someone makes a claim, a kind of safety net. And that's an auditor.
Now, I know that there's something about the word audit that instantly inspires feelings of boredom. But you're going to want to hear about this because this is where we've found that things start to break down. I'm sure you've heard of tax audits that happen every year when you're filing your taxes. And that's when the government might come to check in to see that you've actually done everything properly. Well, detention centers also have audits to make sure that they're doing everything properly when it comes specifically to sexual abuse allegations. This is known as a PREA audit.
PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act. Remember, we mentioned it's meant to prevent sexual abuse and assault in detention.
Detention centers are supposed to have an audit every 3 years. The people that do the audits are third parties who contract with ICE, often from private for-profit companies.
So the audits are supposed to be thorough, abiding by government standards and ethics. But when we went online to look at ICE's most recent PREA audits, we found something very different than we expected.
We opened one of the audits from a detention facility that's infamous for having all sorts of problems.
Which one are you looking at? I'm looking at Eloy. Okay.
This is Linda McFarlane. She's the deputy executive director of an organization called Just Detention International. And she's sort of an expert on this topic because she helps train the auditors.
So I'm looking at their report here. So I will give you an example. So this report is 12 pages long.
Mm-hmm. So I just did a mock audit for a facility that I do work with. My report is 190 pages long.
Hutto was audited last May, and this is the only audit Hutto's ever had, and it's 20 pages. And Linda says if an auditor is doing a thorough job, reports should be substantially longer because there's a huge amount of ground they're supposed to cover.
And she walked through it with us. Like, these are all of the reporting standards that have to be met. And it would be a lot of information if you're following the reporting standards, like a lot of information.
During this audit period, Eloy had at least 30 reports of sexual abuse. And while the audit mentions the cases, it has little detail about how they were investigated.
It says nothing. They are getting subpar audits, clearly, that looking at this one and looking at the others we've clicked on, this doesn't help them do better.
So we're going to sidestep for a moment because we think we figured out why these audits sort of seem unhelpful. And it really has to do with how the system is set up.
The Prison Rape Elimination Act, or PREA, is a set of strict federal standards established in 2003.
So PREA, the law on sexual abuse, started specifically for prisons in 2003. And the idea was to create systems and protections that would reduce the rates of abuse and sexual harassment inside of prisons.
Previously, the Prison Rape Elimination Act only applied to the Justice Department.
The law was applied to immigrant detention in 2014. Over 10 years later.
Prisons and detention centers fall under different branches of government. So in prisons, that's handled by the Department of Justice, and detention centers are overseen by the Department of Homeland Security.
And from what we can tell, prisons have a better oversight system. They have an entire office dedicated to sexual abuse standards. And they have this outside group, made up in part by NGOs and watchdogs, that helps oversee the auditors and enforce PREA. In detention centers, on the other hand, nobody outside of Homeland Security ever looks over their audits.
When we looked at several prison audits, they were considerably longer.
And more thorough than the detention center ones we saw.
And while we can't say for sure why that is, it could have something to do with having outside oversight.
Exactly. And ICE, on the other hand, they're the ones policing themselves. And the audits happen to be a lot less thorough.
So just for a second, that would mean, like, if you get audited by the IRS, but actually you get to approve of the audit yourself. I mean, you're never going to come out like being a bad taxpayer or owing any money because you're the one who's signing off on the audit and saying it's good.
And to be really clear, there are problems in the prison system too, but at least they have outside groups that are part of the process.
Right. And although ICE says the office in DHS that reviews audits is impartial, logically, where's the incentive for the auditor to thoroughly review a detention center and give an honest and possibly critical report when no one outside of DHS is checking up?
I think overall in our detention world in the U.S., we have an oversight issue, right? We don't have good oversight.
And the consequences of that lack of oversight, we're going to go back now to Laura and her story.
The day after Laura Monterrosa was interviewed by officials at the Hutto detention facility, she goes public with her abuse allegations. In a handwritten letter, she described what was happening to her inside of Hutto. She gave that letter to advocates at Grassroots Leadership, who then published it online. And the idea was that if Laura's story got some attention, that it would be harder for ICE to deport her and then make her story disappear. And after she went public, one of the first interviews that Laura did was actually with you, Tina, for Rewire.news.
Yeah, so Laura told me that after she spoke out, she started to face retaliation from guards almost immediately. She was placed in solitary confinement multiple times. And she says that ICE told her that if she continued to speak out, they'd place her in solitary, quote, indefinitely.
On top of that, we obtained documents from Hutto showing that Laura stopped going to the dining hall to eat. On January 4th, she was questioned by an official about this.
According to the document, Laura said that she wasn't going to eat because she was afraid to run into Officer X, who was still employed at Hutto. She says she had already run into her multiple times in the hall and cafeteria.
1 week after this cafeteria report was filed, Laura says she attempted suicide.
I was suffering that depression and I didn't want to continue with my life.
50 pastillas.
Laura reported to a nurse that she took over 50 pills of omeprazole, acetaminophen, and naproxen. The investigation says her blood levels were tested and later found to be non-toxic.
After this, Laura continued to report feelings of restlessness and anxiety. She was placed in solitary medical confinement and was evaluated by numerous social workers and doctors. A nurse noted that a month after her suicide attempt, Laura made a cut to her left wrist to, quote, relieve her emotions.
Court filings say Laura attempted to get help for her depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts at least 5 times before her suicide attempt.
With the help of civil rights lawyers, Laura sued ICE over her medical treatment, resulting in an agreement that she could receive off-site treatment. At the same time, pressure began to mount for Laura's release from activist groups like Grassroots Leadership and elected officials, including 45 congressional representatives who sent a letter to DHS.
Laura's case had become a major news item.
The last 6 months, we have been following the story of Laura Monterosa, the Salvadorian asylum seeker, claims that...
Among her most vocal champions was then-Representative Beto O'Rourke, who says he spoke to Laura in detention and called the ICE field office on her behalf.
And then...
And an undocumented immigrant who claims she was sexually assaulted by a guard at a Hutto detention center has been released.
On March 16th last year, ICE released Laura from Hutto under a 1-year deferred action, right before she was set to be deported. No reason was given for her release. And since she's been out of detention, Laura's life has continued to have ups and downs. On one hand, she began receiving mental health care and has been pursuing her asylum case.
But she ended up once again in what seems to be a toxic relationship, this time with a woman she met at Hutto through a visitation program. And on social media, the woman has since accused Laura of physical abuse.
Whatever your takeaway is about Laura or her case, her story seems to have set into motion a series of events that have put pressure on officials to look into exactly what is going on inside of Hutto.
Welcome to the first People's Tribunal.
In May, Laura, with the help of Grassroots Leadership, led a, quote, People's Tribunal with other former detainees to publicly hold Hutto accountable for human rights abuses. And they staged this tribunal right in front of Hutto.
Donde mi agresora solo aprovechó mi situación, donde tan solo tenía miedo de todo lo que me estaba.
That June, in the wake of the uproar about Laura's case, Williamson County, where Hutto is located, voted to end its relationship with the detention facility.
Cut its ties with an immigrant detention center in Taylor.
The county previously had an agreement with...
The county's contract with ICE expired in January, so activists hope that this is the first step in closing down Hutto.
Meanwhile, abuse continues to be a problem throughout the detention system. According to ICE, in 2018, the agency received almost 400 sexual abuse complaints, the highest number recorded since 2014.
Our thanks to Maggie Freeling and Tina Vasquez of Rewire.news for reporting this story with me. After Laura's case was found unsubstantiated by ICE, the FBI became involved in investigating the allegations against Officer X. They closed the investigation without filing charges. The agency declined to comment for our story. During our reporting, Core Civic initially confirmed that Officer X still worked at Hutto. In a more recent follow-up, they said that as of October of 2018, she's no longer employed with the company. This episode was produced by Maggie Freeling and reported by myself, Maggie Freeling, and Tina Vasquez. To learn more about Laura's case, visit rewire.news and read Tina's two-part companion piece to our reporting. Today's episode was edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Ka, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, Sayer Quevedo, with help from Maya Cueva, and additional editing by Allison McAdam. Fact-checking by Lila Cherniff. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. For our investigation, we'd like to give thanks to Freedom for Immigrants, Just Detention International, Grassroots Leadership, Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, and Gus Bova at the Texas Observer, who has also been reporting on sexual abuse in ICE detention facilities. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. President Trump has declared a national emergency at the border with Mexico. We visit there to look at what's really happening and speak to the people directly affected by the government's policies. That's next time on Latino USA.